my talk has ever made it into any announcement or so, but it is going to be Wigner's friend. But actually, I'm going to say a lot about probabilities and something about cubism, and then towards the end, going to apply all these things to Wigner's friend, and hopefully a contribution, where's Renato, to, he's going to come, to Daniele and Renato thought experiment. So the first thing I'd say, some very short things about cubism. Actually, I would like to recommend the Wikipedia entry. There's actually quite a nice and concise and a very clear Wikipedia page on cubism. So that's commended. So the core of, I mean, basically cubism starts with probabilities. And so let's just look at this primitive here, the probability of an outcome x. And so the things that are special about cubism are that the outcome x is regarded as the personal experience of an agent. So that's the first, tenet. And then the probabilities, given that, they're shockingly, they are the agents, or they're personal to the agent. Call them subjective Bayesian probabilities. They're the agent's valuations. Well, let's write it out, ascribed to his or her degree of belief in X. In the outcome. So there's the outcome is a personal experience, and the probability is valuation. And so the probabilities, and this is going to be relevant for the Wigner's friend analysis, they are answer the question, how should I act? And so we like to refer to them as doxastic probabilities. And that's just a term, well, it means relating to belief, and it's opposed to epistemic. And again, this is an important distinction here, because epistemic, well, refers to knowledge, and so an epistemic probability is, well, somehow expressing, how much you know about, well, some fact or some variable or something in the world. And this answers a totally different question. Here, the question is, how should I act? Not what is the true state of the world or something like this. So let me just give an example. And I couldn't resist applying this to Marcus' Sleeping Beauty problem. So let's see, because this is going to illustrate, well, first of all, maybe the power of the approach, give simple and clear-cut answers, and also how our valuation actually works. So you've got time here. And so there is the coin toss at the beginning, heads and tails. The agent, let's say, is put to sleep, wakes up. In this case, wakes up once. In this case here for tails, wakes up twice. But there's amnesia in between. So the agent doesn't know in which branch he or she, let's call him he, wakes up. And also doesn't know whether he has woken up before or not. Okay. Now, there is this is a fair coin, so probability 1/2, 1/2. So the question is, what if the agent wakes up in here, what probability should he assign to heads, let's say. And so let's just answer the question and ask, well, should it be 1/2 in this case? And so if it's 1/2, then, well, let's just, first of all, at this time agree to a protocol. So we agree on the protocol here. Okay. So if the agent's probability is 1/2, well, it's a valuation. It means that the agent will be happy to bet, say, $2 on H at even odds. Okay, so this means P to the 1/2. And since for the agent all these moments are equivalent, of course, the agent would have to bet at even odds in all cases. And so $2 on H at even odds. Okay?
Even odds
request. P equal to 1/2.
What is P?
Probability that the agent will see heads at the end. Probability of heads, referring to the coin toss. So I mean that was the question. The question was, in this situation, what probability should the agent assign to heads? Okay, so it's betting at even odds is equivalent to assigning probability 1/2. Okay, now now we can immediately show that this is inconsistent in a strong sense, because the agent could now, at the beginning, put $3 on tails at even odds. Okay. So also at this beginning time, and now you can analyze all the possible cases. And so let's look at this here. So this is the heads branch. So so the net winning is $2 from this bet here, even odds. But then the agent loses 3 here. So this one is 3 is minus $1. And in this case here, the net winning is, well, it's minus $2, minus $2 from these two, because for both of these bets, agent loses $2, plus 3 is minus $1. So that means that probability 1/2 is, in this sense, a very bad idea. It leads to a sure loss. And so that would be an inconsistent probability assignment, inconsistent valuations. And this is an example of a Dutch book. And it just means that the agent, if assigning these probabilities means there is the possibility of a Dutch book, there is the possibility of a sure loss. And it can be shown that making consistent probability assignments, that is assignments that are given by probability theory, you can't have. Yes?
It seems like maybe you're smuggling in a kind of counting argument here, because you could have alternatively posed the problem that at one time she'll be asked to place a bet, and it will only happen once throughout this experiment. And in that case, I think maybe you won't get the sure loss. Okay. It's because you're demanding that every time you're awoken, you have to place a bet.
That's right. So, I mean, this refers to this protocol here. So, I mean, you're right. If I did this differently, you might come to a different conclusion. Although, you could do that, yeah. No, I'm not sure, because because if you agree on the protocol to start with here, then the agent, of course, would then notice that they aren't given the option to buy a ticket. So they would know they're an NT in that case. Of course, they wouldn't be asked to bet in that case.
Is your point not that it'll always yield a Dutch book, but just rather to settle the question of what's the right probabilistic assignment, tell me what the protocol is. Like, tell me what gambles are you imagining, And then it will be unambiguous what probabilities you should assign.
Yeah, so there are 3 points now. One point is that for this particular protocol, probability of 1/2 is inconsistent. Secondly, it illustrates what valuations means, that you definitely need a clear protocol.
I guess what people discuss in this context is, anyway, once you operationalize it, then there's always a clear answer.
That's
a kind of
different way of saying that. Yeah.
I just wonder, is that kind of the best operationalization for a Bayesian field? That you say it's kind of the way I usually think of situations, like Dutch book situation would be that one in this context, and not, you know, just placing one bet, or because you can operationalize it in different ways. Sometimes you get 1/2 and sometimes 1/3. But maybe this is the most natural way to do it in this betting context, something like this.
Okay, it's actually, it doesn't matter for the following argument. Evaluation is then simply, to just make this point for last time, so P of H as evaluation just means this. So I regard P of H dollars as a fair price for a contract that pays $1 if H. So that's basically what we mean by probability as a valuation. I'll continue here. A trivial example, but I hope I'm going to let's say you have 3 coins that are tossed, and you assign these probabilities, probability of at least 2 heads equal to 1/2, and probability of at least 2 tails equal to 1/3, okay? Now, that probability assignment is inconsistent, so you can make a Dutch book. But the point I want to make is that probability theory does not tell you how to resolve that inconsistency. So probability theory simply tells you this is inconsistent, because it violates the rules of probability theory, the rule that, because these are just, never mind, it's obvious. So the theory, therefore, provides not probabilities, but only relations between them. So in this case, and in any case, probability theory does not tell you what probabilities to assign. Only especially is a tool to detect inconsistencies. Okay, now let's move to quantum mechanics. So I'd like to discuss the Born rule quickly, briefly. Let's write it down like this. The probability of an outcome j of some measurement is equal to trace rho ej, where this is a density operator and this a P of EM element. Now, this can be very easily rewritten as a relation between probabilities. Because if you have a suitable reference measurement in the background, some informationally complete reference measurement, the right properties, then, rho is just equivalent to a probability vector, or a set of probabilities, and ej is equivalent to a set of conditional probabilities. So this is with respect to a suitable reference measurement. Okay. So the Born rule can be rewritten just as a relation between probabilities. So these probabilities, if you write them down, Well, there is no relation between them enforced by probability theory, because these are different measurements. This measurement here and the reference measurement are unrelated measurements, so therefore you cannot make any inference about relations between these probabilities just from probability theory alone. But the Born rule gives you these additional constraints. So this is why the Born rule in this approach in cubism is regarded as an addition to probability theory. And gives you additional consistency criteria. So they are additional constraints, really. And this is what it provides. So we can now, so we can just say the same thing now. I'm not going to write it again, but this also applies here. So the Born rule, unlike most physicists and most people view it, is not a tool to set probabilities. It doesn't tell you what the correct probabilities are you assign. It is simply a relation between probability assignments, and therefore gives you extra constraints. So you could regard it the same way as a tool to detect inconsistencies, but not as a tool to actually set probabilities. Something else I'm going to need for Renato's thought experiments of some thoughts about that, which is the notion of diachronic coherence. So let me just give you another example. This is diachronic coherence. So, probabilities as valuations, they're really very much like prices for stocks in the stock market. So, in a sense, it's totally, it's the same thing. And this is why, this approach, personalist Bayesian threshold probability, is also what basically most of the theory in this field has been relating to these personalist decision theoretic probabilities has been developed by economists. So my example is from that, and it's going to say something about Bayes' rule and to what extent cubism actually isn't Bayesian. So quantum Bayesianism is really it's a historical term. So let's just look at this example too and following things. So let's look at my valuations for Amazon's stock. So tomorrow, okay? So I have two cases. Let's say Trump tweets about Amazon. Then my valuation is that the stock price is $120. I don't know if there's anything. So he doesn't. That's the other possibility. Maybe long forgotten about Amazon. The stock price is $130. Okay. So this is my probabilities today or my valuations today. Okay. Now next morning, Trump tweets about Amazon. Okay. The price doesn't budge. That's not what I mean. It's 130. Okay. So, for whatever reason, tweeting becomes less effective. What does this mean? Should I now okay. So here's my question. It's an inconsistency here. Should I now sell my stock for $120? Because after all, this is, I mean, if I apply something like Bayes' rule, right? If I conditionalize, these are my conditional probabilities. Next day, I see this is true, so the price should be 120, so this is a fair price. So should I sell my stock for $120? Well, the answer is obviously not. I mean, it would be quite stupid. I would just lose. So I basically just take the windfall and sell them for 130. Okay. So that's an example where it's totally rational not to use Bayesian updating if faced with the sort of new results or knowledge. But here's something that I shouldn't do. Let's just say I have probabilities like this also today. So these are my probabilities for these two events. Okay. What I shouldn't do is buy Amazon stock today for $130, for instance. Okay? Because that would be inconsistent with that. And the point here is that these are my valuations today for the price tomorrow. These are my probabilities today. This is what I regard as a fair price today. And so these are all valuations in a sense they correspond to my beliefs or my knowledge and my beliefs today. And so I can actually compare them. And so so this would be inconsistent. Consistent and violate what's called diachronic coherence. So there's a diachronic Dutch book argument here, and you can of course easily see how you would lose money with certainty in this case.
I don't quite understand why, in the first case, you're not using Bayes' rule. It's like if somebody offered me $10 for a $5 note.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I would sell it to them for $10.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that I don't think that $5 notes are worth $5, right? It's just, you're always willing to sell something for more than you think it's worth. Right?
Well, okay. My point is that if you you take the windfall, because that's the same argument as here, but also most people would actually say, well, I mean, there are all kinds of reasons why the price is now 130. Of course, I could say, well, I know better than the market. Possibly, yeah. But this is a situation where I think it's perfectly reasonable not to use Bayes' rule. You could still do it. I mean, you could say, well, this was based on such solid research that I will now bet that this will be corrected soon, and so I can make a lot of money that way, possibly. But the point is that you don't have to do it, and normally you wouldn't in this situation. You would accept the market price as your own new fair price, and it wouldn't be inconsistent. And the argument, I mean, basically the argument is this: there is no Dutch book argument that connects your probabilities today with the probabilities you sign tomorrow. So you do this all the time. If circumstances change, you just cut your losses, start afresh. That's not inconsistent, especially what you have to do. So what's inconsistent is to have an updating rule like this. You have this price now, and you have an updating rule like that. That's inconsistent. Yes?
I didn't quite hear an answer to Matt's question, that, so let me try to re-ask this question, because I don't understand. If I buy a ticket for 50 cents, because I'm betting on the outcome of coin that I think is a fair coin, and then somebody comes to me and says, I'm willing to pay you 75 cents for that ticket, and I decide, yeah, I'm going to do that. My selling it doesn't mean that I've updated my beliefs about the relative likelihoods of heads.
Okay.
entails. And so why is it that the price I'm willing to pay, in some circumstances, it seems that the price I'm willing to sell for is not reflective of my estimates of relative latency.
I see the point. Let's just slightly modify this. So would it be inconsistent now to buy stock 430? So should I now refuse to buy stock 430? That's a good point, actually, I agree. So this is it. Should I now refuse or refrain from buy stock for 130 or even 125, whatever. But let's make it 130. Okay. The question is simply, would it be irrational to now accept 130 as the new as my new valuation, even though it clashes with what I believed yesterday? And the answer is no, it wouldn't. Because this is very possibly include circumstances I wasn't aware at this time or I didn't take into consideration. And this principle, sort of in a sense, it's a generalization of or an improvement on Bayes' rule, or basically the closest to Bayesian updating that you have in this theory, and that's called the reflection principle. So reflection principle is due to Van Frassen, and this is what it says. It's links probabilities now with probabilities tomorrow, and is the probability now of, let's say, head some event, given that my probability tomorrow of heads is Q. So should be equal to Q. So that's the consistency criterion which you violate if you do this here. So that's the kind of inconsistency you should avoid.
So is heads an event that is repeated? Are you referring to a single event?
Single event that happens tomorrow. Yeah.
Or happens the day after tomorrow?
Or the day after tomorrow. Yes.
So, I'm a bit confused by the conditional. So what does it mean here to condition? It means conditioning on the fact that I believe that the probability would be that tomorrow?
Yes.
Tomorrow I'll be willing to.
Yeah. So just refer back to the top situation there. So basically, I have made up my mind, and I believe that the valuations are up there. So in these two events, these two possibilities, these two branches, these are my valuations.
What's H up there?
The event has to do with the stock price. So I regard the stock price as a valuation for some event. It's a fair price I pay for a piece of stock, which is then which is a gamble. It's a gamble for another event in the future. Yeah.
This equation assumes that whatever physical process leads to event H happening or not is independent of time.
I mean, H refers to single time and a single event. That So H is an event the day after tomorrow.
Is this just saying I shouldn't expect to believe something different tomorrow than I believe today?
It's the other way around, right? So it's always the same agent, right? It's like, if I believe that tomorrow, I'll be willing to bet.
Well, if I know with certainty I believe this tomorrow, then I should also believe it today.
Okay.
Yes. But of course, in that case over there, it's contingent. It depends on another. And this is how it then relates to. So if you want to recover Bayesian updating as an updating strategy, then you will do it like that up there. So it's conditional. So it's conditional on one of these two events. Yeah. Okay. So here's my, I believe it's my last example, actually, it is.
So what's the condition?
That's
the reflection principle?
That's the reflection principle which follows from, well, diachronic coherence is equivalent to the reflection principle. So basically you can make, I mean, as I tried to illustrate up there, you can make a Dutch book if you violate it. So for instance, here where I say what I shouldn't do, if I buy Amazon stock today for 130 or basically make a contract, and at the same time I make these commitments up there, I'm clearly out of pocket. So that would be a diachronic Dutch book argument. And if you do this systematically, you come to you get to the reflection principle.
So I'm trying to understand the reflection principle. Quick question. You had the Sleeping Beauty problem, it had amnesia in it. Seems like a counterexample to the reflection principle. Today I know, I make a bet on a coin flip the day after tomorrow, and maybe I have some inside information that's a biased coin, so you know, I have a high probability for coming out heads. But I know that somebody is going to give me amnesia, and tomorrow I'm going to have forgotten all that inside information, and I'm just going to assign probability half. So it seems like that's a situation where I definitely should not take on board the beliefs of my amnesiac counterpart tomorrow, because they're worse. So how do I save the reflection principle? What's the caveat?
Or just more generally, like if you're gaining or losing information from today till tomorrow, then you're not going to make the same subjective valuations today as you will tomorrow.
Yeah, but then you're not sure today that tomorrow you will have this probability. So like the thing you're conditioning is that today you know for sure that tomorrow you'll assign this.
An example, I get sure that tomorrow you're going to be fed the forgetting potion. There's no uncertainty about that. You know that's going to happen. And your P tomorrow is. You're certain that tomorrow, after you've taken that potion, you're going to have no idea whether it's going to come up heads or tails.
Yeah, good example. And this is actually more or less what my next example is going to say. It's also due to Bas von Frassen's Ulysses and the Sirens. So no, that's due to Homer. So the problem is that Ulysses knows the Sirens are going to eat him or do terrible things to his crew, but he wants to listen to them. So, but he knows that if he listens to them, he will actually lose his mind and steer to his demise. So, what does he do? Well, he has his crew stuff their ears and have them train him to a mast so he can act on his impulses and his evaluation. He now knows he will. Is very irrational. His evaluation he disagrees with now. Now that's slightly difficult to analyze formally. So let's look at the simpler example and much more realistic in a way. This is I don't know how realistic that is, but I know that I'm going to get drunk tonight, and I'll drive to the place to the party. That's my plan. And so now I know, well, if I drive home, then I have a high probability of an accident. But I know that at 2 a.m., I actually will think, no, I mean, I'm a safe driver. I'm driving home. So let's just look at this example. So P now of an accident, let's say, let's make it big, is 10 to the minus 2. But I know also now that my valuation at 2 a.m. Will be Well, let's say 10 to the minus 6. So I'm very sure of myself. It's about as safe as flying. That's inconsistent. Here's why. So this violates reflection. So for instance, the insurance I buy now for $100, right, assuming that the damage won't be more than 10,000, what will it be worth to me at 2 a.m.? Cent, right? So will be worth 1 cent to me at 2 a.m. So that's inconsistent, okay? So the resolution is the same. Everybody knows what the solution is. If you are a person like that, you probably should hand your keys to a friend, and then that's fine. So hand keys to a friend. I believe it's going to be relevant to the Wigner's friend. So I'm going to come to that now. First of all, Wigner's friend, she's quite, it is, was the paper was written in 1961 and just discovered, just looked at it, is called Remarks on the Mind and Body Question. And it's published in a collection, The Scientist Speculates. And the editor of the book is I.J. Good, the same Good who came up with the count of 45,536 varieties of Bayesians. So it all connects. Wigner has the original version here is that, well, Wigner assigns this quantum state. So I'm using the same notation as Wigner, plus beta psi 2 chi 2. And these here, psi 1, this correspond to friend will answer, I saw a flash. And psi 2 is, well, I didn't. Okay, so this is the setup, familiar, and Wigner argues, well, if we accept that the friend did or didn't see a flash at the time of the interaction, so that's almost the words of Wigner. If we accept F did or did not see a flash, so basically this. So an outcome, see a flash, we should assign a different state. We should assign a mixture. I'm not going to put it out. Why not? Of psi 1, chi 1, and so it's one or the other. This is how he writes it. So this is star, star. And now, this is, first of all, is inconsistent. Oh, no, he actually, not we should assign, I should actually be more careful. He says the correct state is. The correct state. So this is Wigner's. These two are inconsistent, so you have two different ways of coming to the same thing, so there's inconsistency here. And of course, we didn't even need Dutch book for that, it's just inconsistent. First point, quantum mechanics, about here, she does not in itself provide, quantum mechanics gives a way of discovering the inconsistency, but doesn't provide a way of actually finding out what state is the correct one. So in this situation, either state might be the state that represents our beliefs correctly. It's the first remark. Trying to find a place to wipe. The second remark. So Wigner's conclusion from this. This is actually quite. This is interesting. Wigner says that the assignment star, so the entangled superposition, where is it? What did I do to it? Oh, no, it's up there. Star denies consciousness to the friend. And he claims that, and he says that's unacceptable. So his conclusion in the end is that for friends or people, quantum mechanics doesn't apply. It's not linear. That's Wigner's conclusion. Cubism comes to, essentially anybody in the Zoom, presumably, who knows, says no. Both star and star are, here's what I would say about Wigner's expectations, valuations for his subsequent experiences or experience. Basically, these states refer to Wigner's expectation for the outcomes, any measurement or question he will put to the system. It's not about the friend's consciousness. Not about the friend's consciousness. But about F's consciousness or experience or knowledge or any of these things. So, in cubism, quantum mechanics is normative. So it asks, how should I act? As I said. So this is how Wigner uses these states and what they mean. Not descriptive. So what's the story, or maybe this way? So it simply doesn't address the question of what the friend's experience is. Now, the only distinction between the two state assignments is the following now. They're here. If Wigner actually did a very, very careful experiment and has a whole mesh of beliefs, careful experimental preparations, calibrations, etc. So that's a very, very careful experiment leading him to this state, including all the states entailed, namely, for instance, that he can now make entangled measurements, etc. If that's Wigner's belief, then of course Wigner has no reason to accept star as the correct quantum state, because mostly because star relies on something informal, on informal reasoning. Because the friend seeing a flash or not seeing a flash, that's just not part of quantum mechanics. So there's nothing in the formalism that would compel this state here. But that's an informal step. But it must still be very good guidance, and this would be an answer to Renato's concern. You might actually still be guided by this, and then find some other good reasons for accepting this state. For instance, you might look at decoherence, or maybe find that if you actually try to reverse this this time of illusion here, you would not expect to find the original state again. All kinds of reasons. But in the end, it's the quantum formalism and quantum mechanics that would decide the question here. Now let's come to your setup. That's marvelous. Well, this move, right? Nobody can ever use this board up there. Well, first of all, I would claim that from Wigner's, from W's perspective, from the outside perspective, you have a very, very similar story to this one here in the end. Because if I'm right, and this still needs to be checked more carefully, if I'm right, you're making use of principles and ideas that are outside quantum mechanics. So informally, of course, the kind of reasoning you're proposing, like asking the other agent, what did you see, etc., that is a strong gives you strong intuition. But in the end, you should just have to apply quantum mechanics to see what the consistent answer is. And if there's a doubt, well, there's quantum mechanics. So I really don't quite understand. I mean, we have a discussion of this, I'm sure, but I don't quite understand the claim that there is no criterion for what reasoning is allowed and what isn't, because we have a criterion. We have the quantum formalism, and so this gives us an answer here. If we actually are unsure between these two things, well, we always should use the quantum formalism. And there are many situations. And if you attempted to accept the kind of reasoning corresponding to your criterion C, well, then also you can use quantum mechanics. You might assign mixed states, and you just would check that applying your informal reasoning, talking about what the friends know, whether this equals or not to what quantum mechanics may predict. But here's something more concrete about your criterion C. So C, consistency, okay? Your criterion C. So let us put it back here. A, such beautiful. So this is what you put up, okay? And here is A prime. And A prime thinks Z equal to zero. Okay, and this implies that A now also should believe Z equal to zero, right? So this is a version of your criterion C. Now, I mean, I claimed in the discussion that this in some circumstances is just a trivial consequence of probability theory. I just want to put this down here. So let's just say, I mean, of course, it doesn't follow from nothing. But one can actually put some sufficient conditions for when this is true, and so such a set of sufficient conditions would be this. So probability of Z equal to zero, given that A asks A prime what's Z, and A prime says Z equal to zero, is equal to one. Okay, so basically, I trust A prime. This assistant, so that in the sense that if I ask, and A prime says Z is zero, then also says it is equal to zero. Second condition which I need, the probability that A prime says Z equal to zero, given that I ask, is one. And that corresponds to your particular scenario, where actually I just from the circumstances, I know that my state assignments are such that I'm certain that A prime will give this answer. And I need one more thing. If so, it's basically in the case that I ask, and so A asks. If this is one, then I need to have that also the probability doesn't ask, or ask is one. So in this particular case, my faith in that conclusion doesn't depend on whether I do or not ask the question. And if all these things are fulfilled, then I do indeed have P A of Z equal to 0 is equal to 1. So here's this captures, I think, the most intuitive version of this, namely that I'm standing in front of you and I know that if I ask you, you will give me the answer, and I will trust you completely. And in that case, I don't even have to ask. I can immediately say, well, okay, I accept this as my conclusion. And so the challenge, I mean, my suspicion is, and I'm actually quite convinced about that, that you're not able to derive the version of C you need for your argument from simple considerations like that. And so the challenge would be to find maybe in this language what the additional assumptions really are. And my conclusions here about Wigner's perspective is that they would be very similar to these. So we do not need extra assumptions. The quantum mechanics is the consistency formalism we have. And if we have ways of reasoning that conflict with quantum mechanics, we have to just abandon them. We don't need new constraints or criteria for that. So the last thing I will briefly address, because you always underestimate. Well, not too bad. Still under an hour. A very brief address is now something that I found. Most interesting about, actually this is not, also very interesting, and I think it's kind of surprising. It's, okay, in cubism, a priori, you would not even demand that different agents in the Wigner-Friend story have consistent stories, right? Because Wigner's probabilities, the Stider-Simons, they refer to his expectations for future experiences, for his future experiences, and the friends and all the friends in their establishments refer to their expectations of their future experiences. And there's no reason a priori why the state assignments or the experiences or anything should agree. In the spirit of diachronic coherence, you can ask for the story from the perspective of friend, I think it's F bar, but I might be wrong about that. One of the friends, I think it's F bar. It's the one who makes the prediction about the final. So it's F bar, right? Now clearly, for F bar, there is a stage before the experiment. They all know everything, right? So F bar, in some sense, before the experiment, F bar's predictions are identical to W's. Because this is before the experiment happens, and you're basically outside of the network. Now you step inside. And during the experiment, F bar's predictions, well, I assume, I believe, I checked this, but are inconsistent with these. How do you say this? Different, and the whole thing violates diachronic coherence or reflection. So the analysis of the experiment from Wigner's perspective, which is what you've mostly done, Wigner, it's Wigner's prediction. Wigner has two ways of coming up with his answers. Either he uses quantum mechanics in the usual way or looks at sort of what the various friends tell each other and tell him. That's the story from Wigner's perspective, but I think the story from F. Barr's perspective is also interesting. And I think it's pretty clear that it violates this reflection principle. So I'd say, in some strong sense, it's like, well, I'm not sure if it's serious or not, but it's not that dissimilar to the car accident drinking story, because really, I mean, if I were F. Barr, I certainly wouldn't do it, and nobody would. But that's maybe not so serious. Although it's in the spirit of the idea that the formalism, quantum formalism, as well as probability formalism, gives you tools to detect inconsistencies, but not how to resolve them. So I think one could almost leave it at that here. I don't believe it would be a serious problem. But there's another aspect which I think clinches it, and this is what I think is Marcus who made the remark, namely that F bar can never actually act on this on these predictions here. So therefore, you couldn't really make a Dutch book argument out of that, because F bar will be superposed, and there will be no memories of any commitments F bar made during the experiment. So F bar cannot act on the on these predictions or these beliefs here, and so therefore the conditions for the diachronic coherence argument aren't fulfilled. So that's all I wanted to say. Thanks for your attention. Principle.
So what it does is kind of impose some arrow of time on an agent's memory. Because what it says is, tomorrow I'll only have more information than I have today, so if tomorrow I trust the person that I'll be tomorrow more than I trust myself now, so I should adjust my probabilities accordingly. Which is why it doesn't work in the case of the drunken friend, right?
I'm not sure. It doesn't put an arrow of time. It just says if they disagree with these probabilities, then I'm inconsistent. It doesn't say what you need to do in order to resolve it.
Right? Not that I think it's more a statement about what it means to be one agent and what time means for me than.
Do you lose information in this case here? To just gain information. You have more to do with.
This compares to time zero from day one, right?
But it's true that it goes forward. I don't think that it certainly it's time ordered, but only because probabilities here are always always relate to some future action you take. In that sense, there is a time order from the very beginning in the theory, because probability you write down is a probability, is a valuation for some future action. But in the reflection principle is explicitly symmetric. Well, not in the following sense, that there's no preferred. I mean, you don't say that you have to set your present probability in terms of your future ones or vice versa. It just says they have to satisfy this. And it's explicitly a way of going, just putting Bayesian, I mean, getting a firm handle on Bayesian updating. Because there is no, I mean, as the argument about the Amazon stock to say there is no, I mean, you can't prove that Bayesian updating is always a rational thing to do. So tomorrow you might actually come up with completely different valuations. So the question is, what really, I mean, what can you prove and what can you, what's firm? And firm is a reflection principle. And that also means that if you want an updating strategy, it has to be Bayesian updating. If you decide now what probabilities you will assign tomorrow, then you have to use Bayesian update. In that sense, it goes and forward. You use the probabilities today to set the ones tomorrow. So it works both.
But you're not saying that you could just replace the labels now and tomorrow?
No. Okay. Definitely not. No. This is why I said symmetric only in a certain sense. I mean, only. Yes?
So you made a relatively strong point that if we are unsure what to do, we should just ask quantum mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I wasn't clear about what the status now would be of this reflection principle, because this seems to be a principle that comes in independently of quantum mechanics. So, are you, I kind of wasn't sure whether you want to claim that at the end, everything we need, or all we need, is actually quantum mechanics, and we don't need additional principle like this C or so, because we can just ask quantum mechanics. But then, on the other hand, I understood that the reflection principle is some additional element you want to add to the theory. So I wasn't sure what the claim was, it's just clarification. Whether you want to say the reflection principle is so clear that, of course, we take that in addition, or whether you even say if that was violated.
You see, I would regard the reflection principle as part of probability theory. Because it has the same status as the rest of probability theory, it's derived from Dutch book coherence, from no sure loss. Yeah. So in that sense, it is part of probability theory, and then I would regard quantum mechanics as an addition to that. But of course, you cannot use the quantum formalism independently of probability theory. It's built on top. It's an addition to it. So that would be my answer. This is how I see it.
So it really follows. So this is an implication of the Dutch book. I wasn't aware of that. So the reflection principle is not an additional.
No, it's assumption. Yeah, it is because you can make a Dutch book argument because all the probabilities are today's, all the variations are today. So you are, I mean, it's in the sense, it's. The argument is a definition of the terms almost, because it works because you make commitments now on all these various. I mean, all these probabilities correspond to valuations, and in principle, well, contracts you're willing to sign, and you sign them all now, and therefore you can make a standard Dutchbrook argument, even though some of the probabilities refer to your beliefs tomorrow. But yes, there is something called the diachronic Dutch book argument, and that was invented. I don't know, I think it's Brian Kerms. That is all work from the 90s.
I have another question just for clarification, which is somehow it seemed almost like you're deriving the assumption. I mean, in some way. But now, I guess, on the other hand, you said the C assumption is something that is too strong. So are you saying that the C assumption is not precise enough? So you get a version of it?
Yes. What I said was, this is a straightforward version of it, where you refer to. I mean, there's a lot of certainties here, and all these probabilities refer to future measurements. Let's say so. This z equal to zero, and also, I mean, this probability that z is zero, given that you ask and A prime says z equals zero. All these are things that you can do now or in the immediate future. So that does not include the case where you, I mean, which is not necessarily what you say. So I'm still kind of confused about the time question. You're thinking about my suspicion. I mean, what I said when I asked my question, that I suspect there's some version of the counterfactual reasoning here. Is that it is that you see a version you need is well. I know that A prime would have answered Z equal to zero if I had asked her 20 minutes ago or so. Something like that, not exactly that, but so, but something that isn't covered by these simple assumptions here.
Yes, but you didn't put any time, so you implicitly mean that, for example, when you write A asks and A prime says and so on, that these things happen at specific times.
Right. So this, in a sense, is implied, although I didn't say it explicitly, implied by the decision theoretic or action, informing action element of it. It's also actually, in a sense, I mean, if you define random variables carefully, I mean, okay, these here, random variables always refer to, I mean, a contract or some decision you take in the future because you can't take a decision in the past. Random variables, if they are about things you can't really, even in principle, find out the truth value of, it might also be difficult. And of course, that's also a problem you might have, because if your random variable is something that F bar believed X, right, then that's a slightly, or maybe very dodgy random variable. But that is, I mean, that is sort of all implied by this informing action normative view of probability. So they are not just, it's more than just formal probability calculus. It is really meant as the, as well, valuations for future action.
I think this is a very interesting point. Maybe you should just sit down and go through this more precisely all the times and see where it ends. Because I'm also a bit confused, because one minute it looks like it can just be derived.
But I think last year in Stellenbosch, we actually spent quite some time going through arguments similar to that and trying to identify which of the ones is not implied by probability theory. Now, I remember that we found one where we both agreed, no, this is actually not implied by probability theory. You just said it's just very reasonable to assume this, but it's not implied by probability theory. We came to such a conclusion, but Okay, so you had the other question.
That's all
okay.
Thanks.
Who's the chair? Okay, if there are no further questions, let's thank the speaker again.